Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this man here is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Did you have a good, fun time partying it up?
No, I, as you regular viewers or listeners, whatever you want to call yourselves, human beings, as regular human beings will know, I spent the whole of Christmas playing Father Christmas in a play.
That's right.
Which was called Secret Santa in the Arts Theatre West End.
Finally we can know what
finally,
it is.
Finally, it's finished now. I did, I, in front of an average of 20 people a day in a 350-seater because it wasn't publicised.
Did they move them all down the front sit anywhere they like?
Half the time they didn't move them down the front. Most of them were Japanese. The Arts Theatre, the worst theatre in the West End. They were really rude to us, put no advertising up for the show. Someone broke into our dressing room.
Oh, God.
Stole the girl who was in the show, three of us, her phone. They denied, they said that we're making it up until they checked the CCTV footage and found out there was a bloke walking around the theatre, and they said it wasn't their fault. Then they said there was a code on the door and they're all different and all just dressing rooms, so they couldn't be broken into. Turns out they're all exactly the same.
So it's probably an actor.
Then they said that no one could have got into the room, but the gap between the door was so big that we showed it. Basically, you just put one knife in there takes 0.5 seconds to open the door. And then they said, oh, why would the thief have a knife or something like that with him?
Why would a thief have tools?
So we had to go to our producer. The bloke who's producing the show has yet to pay us and has basically lied about having a stroke to try and avoid paying anyone. So I basically spent a month doing a show which I haven't been paid for. I haven't had any Christmas and I'd be...
Did you not have any Christmas at all?
Christmas day off I had.
Right. Did you get to spend that with some people? Or...
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I spent it with my girlfriend and her family, but I spent all of Christmas doing a show in front of Japanese people so I could buy a new computer, and I haven't yet been paid for the show. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
I feel like the biggest arsehole in the world.
Oh, well, I don't know about that, Mary.
I just had to get out of my system. I know that was a bit
enough. Was New Year any better?
Or stayed in.
You stayed in?
I haven't been paid.
No, of course. I mean, but also, London, when people are partying, for instance, Saturday nights on a regular basis, is intolerable, I think. I think it's an awful place to be.
Everyone I know stayed in this year because they realised that everyone over 30 realises the horror of going out. Do you want to go to an old pub for a drink? Oh, that'd be £30 to get in, please.
£30 to get in, and there'll be twice as many people in there as normal.
And a lot of arseholes.
Mostly arseholes, yeah. Well, I stayed in as well. I watched films.
I stayed in, and before we start, I watched on New Year's Eve Hunt for the Wilder People, which was in your top five.
That's right, top five films of last year.
And I was put off watching it because the trailer just looks like, oh, it's about a fat kid and an old man in the woods.
Yeah.
And is it quite kidsy? I was wrong. This would go straight into my top. It would have used...
What would it have taken over?
I would take out Victoria.
Really? Well, Victoria still would have been in there in our top 10 because it was in mine.
But I think I'll give it 10 Mareks is really original.
It's a fantastic film, isn't it?
Because it's the same director, it's a New Zealand director who did the vampire one with
What We Do in the Shadows, Taika Waititi,
which I wasn't a massive fan of. I think you liked that, didn't you?
I did like it. I mean, the vampire genre has been done to death for comedic purposes even before Buffy the Vampire Slayer came along, thoroughly mined it, and I thought there's nothing anyone can do, this is a hack area. And it surprised me. I actually thought it was really good.
But this film is really laugh out loud funny. I think it absolutely brilliant. And for January, February, if you're feeling a bit the New Year depression,
yeah,
watch this film. It's great, isn't it?
Yes. It's absolutely brilliant. Still, go see it. Go find it.
It's online. You can rent it for £3.50 off Google Play or YouTube.
Yeah, any
or something
of these,
like that.
These things. Yeah. I use Microsoft's one because I'm on an Xbox, but they're all the same price around about.
It's really worth it.
To that point where it's really annoying when they try and make it only available to buy, because it just means you don't watch it. Have you seen that when the big new releases come out and they're like, it's $9.99 to buy. You just go, I just want to watch it once and then forget about it. Why do I have to? So those are the films I just go, nah, fuck off.
I want to forget about everything.
Oh god.
But we both went to the cinema.
We did. We both went to see the same film this week, which is a rare occurrence. Especially since there's quite a few things out at the moment, actually.
You did Rogue One, Passengers, Silence, which we'll talk about next week, and Monster Calls. That was pretty much it.
That's enough films. How many do you need?
Seven.
Okay, what a day. Yes, we both went to see A Monster Calls. Now, what did you know about this before you went? Because all I knew was I hadn't seen a trailer, I'd seen a teaser. So, to me, it looked like a heartwarming live-action version of The Iron Giant, but with a tree. I couldn't really have been more wrong.
I read the book last year.
Okay.
Because my brother, as some people might know, is a children's author. And he's written a second book, Podkin One Ear, nominated for the Blue Peter Award. Please buy it. But I started reading I got bored of reading quite intellectual books. And I started reading books from the Time magazine's top 100 young adult fiction.
Right.
Which young adult, things like To Kill a Mockingbird, Catcher in the Rye, Warship Down.
These are young adult fiction.
Yeah, but I think we're quite really good books. I read brilliant books. Holes is another brilliant one. The Amazing Event. I can't remember what they're called, but one of them was A Monster Calls, which I happened to read.
Yes.
Which.
It's actually written by two people, isn't it?
Because the idea came up. The idea was. It's written by Patrick Ness, but the original idea or concept.
Well,
the, is from
I've read
else.
About this because that it said this at the end of the film as well. You know, based on a concept buy, and you just go, they don't usually credit the concept. They usually just pay them off and then make it. And it's actually she started writing the book and then she died, and so he carried it on in her name. Basically, he finished the book. So, I don't know how much of it was actually her. I forget her name now, which is
S. Sonderberg or something like that.
Yeah.
The book is absolutely brilliant. Okay. And I was really moved to tears by a book, which I don't really get feel that emotion over books, although I do love, I'm quite an avid reader.
Yeah. But Siobhan Dowd is the...
Oh, I got it completely wrong.
Completely wrong.
But the book is very, very good.
So anyway, basically, what this is about, and I don't want to spoil too much, but it's about a boy, a young boy, who is dealing with the fact that his mother is having chemotherapy, and he's visited by an enormous tree, voiced by Liam Neeson in the night, who says he's going to visit him three times, quite like Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And tell him three stories, after which he will visit him a fourth time and the boy has to tell him his story. It's a very proper sort of fable kind of setup to it, actually.
And there's animations in it as well. Which
little animations that are done like watercolour and stuff.
I think they're spectacular.
Wonderful. This film, I thought, was absolutely brilliant.
I thought it was
knocked
incredible.
Me for six. I hadn't a clue what it was about. And... when I say I couldn't have been more wrong about it being a sort of remake of The Iron Giant with a tree, this is not a film for kids. Do not take your kids.
There were kids in the cinema.
Fucking
and it's
hell.
A 12-8. It's no way to... It's not about,
you know, it being graphic or sweary. It's not the subject matter for kids, even though it's about a kid going through this. Basically, it's about him coming to terms with his mother's death.
Mm.
That everyone in the cinema, when I went to see it, was in absolute bits. There was a woman behind me who was in tears from about halfway point onwards and did not stop. The person she'd come with had to go to the loo at one point, and she was trying to whisper, sort of like, you know, come back soon or whatever, and she'd lost all volume control of her voice.
Really?
So there was just this sort of, hey, behind, and nobody in the cinema minded, because you're just like, no, we sort of get where you're coming from.
I cry a lot of films. I've never cried so much at a film. I found it profoundly moving. The last half an hour, I was just in tears.
It's Sigourney Weaver plays the grandmother of this kid, and it's Felicity Jones plays the mother. And they're both brilliant in it, I think.
Yes, there's a time I thought, having read the book, and it's so hard, and normally the case, there's very few books which the film does justice, especially in kids. Like Watership Down is one, and the cartoon, I think, does it.
The author of which died.
Yes, but Richard Adams, yes. Yeah. This does the book justice. I thought it was absolutely spectacular.
It was beautiful. There was only one moment, and I hate to nitpick, really, but I should point out, because I noticed it, where I went, you didn't need that piece of voiceover. You know, things are more beautiful when they're not being explained, when you've felt them and you can see them for yourself.
And when was that?
And it was, well, it would be a spoiler to tell you. We'll talk about it afterwards. But there was one moment where it Danny Boyled itself for me, but it was literally 3 seconds and then it moved on. So it's like, it's a real quibbling. The director, I think, is absolutely brilliant. He's a guy called J.A. Bayona.
Yes.
Fiona?
You pronounce it. I can't pronounce it.
But he did The Orphanage, which I've not seen yet, but I'm told is very, very good. And he also did The Impossible, which was a really above-average natural disaster movie.
I thought Impossible was brilliant.
Yeah,
movie
fantastic.
Well, yeah.
He's so good at moving human family stories without feeling like you're just having your buttons pushed in a lazy way. This film felt like it was telling me something of which I have no experience, but of which a writer who hadn't experienced it themselves wouldn't be able to write about.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like clichés were coming, and they never did. It always went to somewhere brand new. And I thought, no, it's...
You've got to talk about the kid who plays Connor.
Is excellent, isn't it?
I mean, it's such a hard thing to... a role to play.
To stick an entire film about feelings on the shoulders of a child actor.
And he does a brilliant job. I mean, I've got to say, and I'm going to have a go at another critic, because I read reviews of this, and the reviews have been mixed, and I cannot understand it. Peter Bradshaw, who writes for The Guardian, he gave this 3 stars.
Fuck off.
And I hate this review. I've read countless reviews of his, which I go into the film, and my opinion is completely different. He calls it sort of a sugar-sweet sort of thing about grief. And he reviews Silence, which I talk about. We'll talk about next week.
Yeah,
and gives that a better review, just because it's Scorsese. I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I just a lot of the reviews. Yeah, he's one review I think is just way off the mark.
Yeah, I've read quite a few Peter Bradshaw reviews, and often I feel like, do you even like films? Like, you seem to be wishing it was a play or something. Like, he just seems to not really
and
like
showing deference to sort of. People who are just directors rather than the film itself. Yeah. It just becomes about this, talking about these stuff that, I mean, in general, all critics are wrong apart from me and you,
that's
David.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Well, that's obviously true.
But it's, I think, don't be, if you look up some reviews, the first thing that came up was that his review in the, a short review in The Guardian. I thought, why are you even giving it a short review? There's so much to talk about in this film.
Yeah.
And it's, and it handles so beautifully, and it looks beautiful as well. And the CGI is not really that
important, really.
Yeah.
But it works. And it's for artistic reasons rather than just gratuitous reasons that the reason it's this tree.
Yeah.
And the reason it's, you know, it in terms of it being a blockbuster movie, it isn't one, but we have seen this CGI before. You're not going to it to just go, oh, and the big tree man was beautiful. No, we've seen that in Lord of the Rings and in Guardians of the Galaxy. Big tree men is something they can do now. They've probably got a drop-down menu.
The animations, I thought, were brilliant. I absolutely loved
the watercolour. They were beautiful,
stuff.
weren't they? And wholly justified as well within the story. No, brilliant. Yeah. I mean, just go see it.
But really, I found it really hard. I found it a really difficult watch, and I was upset by it afterwards.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really challenge. I mean, you will go and cry at this film.
Yeah, you will cry publicly in a cinema, so...
The most tear-jerking film I've ever watched.
I agree. I'd agree with that. We're probably now setting it up for a fall with our listeners.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. I think it's going to be in people's sort of a great film for you. I think it will just gain respect by maybe not the critics, because I don't know why this film will be frowned upon, but if it's not, but it seems to be the critics haven't embraced it as I don't know.
It's got a fairly good Rotten Tomatoes score, so I think maybe in America they've embraced it.
But, yeah.
No, it's excellent, and Liam Neeson. It does superb work doing voiceover, because I've not seen him do voiceover particularly before.
He's done
a couple of things, but
I think old Thingy Plops has been.
Who's Thingy Plops?
You know, Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, Morgan Freeman.
He's done too many now. You can't use Morgan Freeman to voice your film. So Liam Neeson's going to be the new Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a friend about Morgan Freeman the other day.
I thought you were going to say you were talking to Morgan Freeman.
I was talking as Morgan Freeman. And I hadn't really appreciated that Morgan Freeman was only a big actor from the 90s onwards. Like, because he's an old guy, and he's always been around in my mind, I was sort of like, well, of course he must have been doing stuff in the 60s and 70s.
Driving Miss Daisy.
And then... people still didn't really know who he was when he did Robin and Prince of Thieves. I was thinking about that because I saw a documentary about Alan Rickman and he was talking about that was on over Christmas. But no, Morgan Freeman is brilliant. I mean,
he's
incredible voice, but he has
too many
done too many. He has done. Yeah, well, there you go. A Monster Calls. I'd probably give it 9 Davids, I think.
I'd give it 10.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent, excellent film and a real surprise. Nice to have out in the cinemas this early on in 2017. Well, now I think it's time for this. This is from Scott about reboots. He says, "Hello, David, Marek and Buddy. Here in sunny Adelaide, the local soulless cinema chain has come up with a good idea and is running a film classics season. This is allowing me to slowly tick off films that I have never previously seen on the big screen. Aliens being the most recent, which was superb." Correct, it was. I watched it 2 nights ago. It's on telly. "I also got to see Highlander, and it got me thinking about movies that are ready for a reboot, mainly because the central idea is so good and the casting for the original was so utterly bonkers, e.g. a very Scottish Sean Connery playing an Egyptian who is accused of being Spanish by a very French Christopher Lambert trying to be Scottish. The film will always have its place in history, but I do think it could be done better, and I say that as someone who isn't a fan of reboots. Are there any other films that you can think of that deserve a reboot? Keep watching the films, Scott. P.S. to be read in a Frenchman trying to be Scottish accent." If you put it at the end, well, it's never going to happen. I'm from lots of places.
Can you do that again?
I'm from lots of places. The thing is, though, about Highlander, I mean, Scott's entirely right. But the casting is bonkers, but it almost makes it better because it's so high camp, starting with the wrestling sequence and the soundtrack by Queen, that this weird accent that Christopher Lambert has and the fact that Sean Connery's in it, who's so likeable, and especially in that period of his career as well. Like, he'd stopped being so serious about being sexy and started to have fun.
Until The Untouchables, it was a nice moment.
Yeah, so I don't know. And Clancy Brown is an absolutely perfect villain.
I think the problem is you could recast Christopher Lambert, although I quite like the fact he's bland compared to Sean Connery and Clancy. Is it Clancy Brown?
Clancy Brown.
You can't get a better villain than him.
Clancy Brown is the underrated most Kurgan.
He's amazing.
Fucking incredible. I mean, can you think of any actor now who would be able coming into the scene in the church where he's got the safety pins to his neck to keep his head on still, and he's going at nuns and stuff?
Yeah, there's not so there's weird. Of that. The only one I think who could play great, who's got an amazing evil presence, is Michael Shannon, who's
Would he be as funny? No, he can't play the thing.
And Clancy Brown's, I really love him. I wish he was in more films.
Yeah, I mean, we recast Highlander in our casting games some time back. I can't remember what episode it was, but the poster that I made is on our website, filmfandango.com. They're all up there. And I believe you cast Nicholas Coster-Waldau as Connor McLeod.
Yes, and he would be good, yeah.
And we had Javier Bardem as Ramirez.
That's quite good, actually. We did quite a good job on this.
And then it was
a wrestler, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Brock Lesnar, who, just because he looks terrifyingly physical, he would not be as funny as Clancy Brown. It's Clancy Brown is the problem for me. I don't see how you do that part better.
And if you've got no villain like that, suddenly the whole film falls down, I think.
Ramirez.
Yes.
Great. Any other films? I mean, that was the second part of Scott's question. Any other films that
I hate think? Reboots.
Yeah.
And they've all been... I think they actually are all being done.
Yeah, they're slowly.
You just say that Ghostbusters that's been done, they are all... What will be next? Teen Wolf or something?
Oh, that's already been remade as a TV show. Yeah, that's been a god, mate. It's when they start the films we consider to be modern films, we'll go like, oh, fucking hell.
That's just getting old, isn't it?
You know, when they start Harry Potter again, you know, that'll be just like, what are you doing? It's coming. I mean, we talk about this every now and again, but how are you feeling about the new Blade Runner? Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, I've seen the trailer.
I don't know, man. It just seems like the bit with Harrison Ford is the exact same bit as the bit with Harrison Ford from the new Star Wars. Yeah, he walks out of the darkness and is Harrison Ford. You say, you did play these characters different back in the day, and now they're just all Harrison Ford.
I just think that's the problem when the problem is they all compromise, like the new Ghostbusters with all those terrible cameos, where they feel they've got to pay homage to, I mean, he said before about Star Wars.
Yeah.
The first one is half reboot, half the exact same. It's just be a completely different film set in that world.
It's simultaneously being a sequel and a remake.
The classic example, Alien, Aliens. Two completely different films.
Beautifully done.
And they're both, one's an action horror, one's
a haunted house film. Yeah. The first one, it's like a slasher. You're being chased by a single murderer, basically. Yeah, no, it's so hard. I mean, Alien Covenant, the trailer's come out as well, which is the new Ridley Scott directed alien film that seems to, I mean, I might be wrong about this, but it seems to be almost ignoring Prometheus and going back to what made Alien good, which I'm sure is what they're trying to tell everybody, because Prometheus was, for all it looked beautiful, was gash.
First 10 minutes had so much promise, but
exactly, the bit with Michael Fassbender playing basketball and watching Lawrence of Arabia was fantastic. He just went, oh, this is no, quite wrong. It's quite wrong.
I actually thought it was good the first time I watched it, because I watched it in 3D, and then I watched it on my normal TV screen and realised how warped my opinion had been by going to the IMAX for the first time.
But I felt that same that way about Phantom Menace when that first came out. I came out of the cinema happy, and then slowly, as I thought about it more, it fell apart in my memory. It just sort of crumbled into dust.
I was saying this to my friend, saying that you should really have two ratings for films: instant leaving the cinema film rating, and your 3 or 4 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I must say thank you as well to Mark Bell, my friend and Wolfsburg fan, who got me in every man voucher so I could go to cinema.
Oh, that's good.
Which is nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Another letter.
Go on then, who's written in?
Here we go, you can
Am
read.
Am I doing
you're
it again?
You're better at reading.
Okay. This is from Gary Martindale about The Final Girls. Hi David, Marek and Buddy the dog. Please watch The Final Girls. It is a horror from 2015 that has recently appeared on Netflix. Excellent, I'm glad to hear that. I don't really want to say anything else, which I know isn't really helpful to you as a letter for the podcast, but I would prefer to hear your views on the film rather than taint your viewing experience with my own views, which is basically what we do in this podcast, isn't it? I mean, we're basically...
ruining
we're
people's
film
films.
Tainters.
Yeah, ruining it.
We should call it The Taint, really.
Most people who listen to this podcast afterwards, they sit down and they think, well, this has made my life worse.
Just slightly worse, you know.
Yeah.
We're not powerful enough. Sorry. Gary continues, keep watching the films, Gary. I stopped at the wrong point in that later. We shall have to watch that. You haven't watched it, have you? You're not surprised.
No, but I have. What I did do is I watched... Thank you for these recommendations, by the way, because we will eventually get around to watching them. And it's really useful for other listeners as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is my favourite part of the show is the fact we find these little hidden gems that can't get the publicity budgets first time round necessarily. But because people know we do this podcast, when we see friends and other comedians and then meet their friends, people are always recommending films to us. So the list of things we've got to see is quite long. But we will get around to them, we will.
Well, I did get around to watching some. So
which one?
Previously, Adam Taylor and Tyler, I always say your name wrong, Tyler Ronda, I can't say it, have both recommended a film.
Yes, well that's a good sign.
Which is a documentary called Sour Grapes.
Oh yes, I remember reading this letter out in the first place.
On Netflix, which I mean you would never find unless it was recommended to you.
Yes.
It's a story about the wine auctions and the wine industry and how in the sort of 80s or 90s, buying wine suddenly became a big thing for rich people.
Yes.
And wine auctions became this huge thing for city traders in the night, you know, when everyone had loads and loads of money. And it's about... it's a story of this young... is he Malaysian? I can't remember. Kid who appears on the scene and he starts buying all these really big wine bottles and starts drinking with all these sort of millionaires and rich TV film producers.
Right.
It's a great gem, this one. Well, thank you to Adam Taylor and Tyler for recommending it. If you've got a spare hour and a half and you want to find out about a world that you... I mean, I know nothing about the wine auctioning world.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating when you see a documentary where you've got interviews with the man from the Burgundy vineyards in France talking about his grapes and how people are... basically, these fraudulent wine bottles start appearing. And it's just a mystery story.
Any big business, I guess. There's going to be people trying to...
Yeah, and the great thing is there's lots of... It's a documentary with sort of past footage and interviews with these people, literally with millionaires, multi-millionaire wine collectors and film and TV directors who are in this sort of wine boys club. And a lot of the characters are total bellends.
Well, that's what you want in a documentary.
Perfect.
You want
perfect.
Total bellends... and giving them enough rope to hang themselves, so
yes.
They just make themselves out to be told. No, excellent. I mean, I know next to nothing about wine selling as well. I have a friend who actually, we went to university together, and she did maths, and she went into finance and hated it. Like, basically ruined her life. She was like, I can't stand this, so she quit. And went into wine selling.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she'd learned enough about wine from having the disposable income and having to talk about fancy wines with rich people.
Of course.
So, no, and she's since married a chef. So she's very happy now.
Oh, that's a nice story.
It is, isn't it? Everything I know has come from my mate Alex.
Well, this is...
I want to see it.
It's a fascinating documentary about... And it's nice to see... to sort of escape to different worlds you know nothing about
yeah,
in some
yeah.
of these documentaries. So It's really well done, and I don't think you would find this. Obviously, it's quite a niche.
When's it
thing.
From?
Let me have a look. I'm just going to look on my phone. Please, I mean, people at home, you can just take this time just to think about something, or, you know, just taking your surroundings.
Yeah, think about...
Have a deep breath. Wonder what that's...
Try and identify that smell.
It's from 2016, last year.
Okay, so it is...
And it's only an hour and 25 minutes, so...
Perfect.
I give it 8 Mareks.
Sour grapes. Track that down.
If you're on Netflix and spending hours, as everyone does, and everyone makes jokes about, flicking through, trying to find something, and all the films you want to watch you've already seen, and you can't, yeah. All the other ones look terrible.
I'd be interested in the stats, actually, of, you know, people always binge watch, like, Westworld or The OA seems to be a new one, but people also binge watch the Netflix menu, don't they? Like, that's how many hours spent, because Netflix will have this data, how many hours spent just scrolling through their very inefficient labelling system.
Yeah, it's terrible. You have to search for sour grapes. 85 minutes, well spent. And please send in more recommendations for Netflix, because it's really useful for ones that people make, ones that don't come up in the menu and literally on in every single menu. Because if you go into, if you search and browse and look on documentaries or there's literally about 100-150 there. But when in your own menu, it's just the same 20 films come up.
All the time.
So you have to directly search for films in Netflix. It's a terrible system.
Interestingly, actually, I don't know if it is interesting. I'll just say it, see if you find it interesting.
Oh, well,
but at my friend Alex's wedding to the chef, we have a mutual friend who I hadn't seen in a while because he lives in LA, who has also went to university with us, who now sells films. He's a film seller. Like,
what? Underneath the counter?
That's right, around pubs.
What would you like for the weekend?
From a sports pack.
I was going to do an accent then, but
Well, he sells up. So Don't Breathe, the horror film, was one of his companies. Anyway, and he was saying the Netflix thing is quite interesting because, of course, you know when it says a Netflix original on it, when it's got their logo on it.
It's not always, is it?
It just means that it's been sold to them instead of a distribution company. So the distributor will get it into the cinemas, whereas Netflix will put it into Netflix. And what's happening is, and the reason that the business models have changed and why Netflix is so massive for these things, is that if you put your film in the cinema, you get a return of box office. Whereas if you give it to Netflix, it's a one-off flat fee, that's it, and that's you guys done. And so people are now playing this gamble of it could make 350 million quid, it could make 46 quid, we don't know.
It's a one-off flat fee from
Netflix. Or Netflix go, we'll give you 15 million, that's it.
There's no renewal for like 3 months or anything.
No, that's it. That's it. Well, there may be if it's a film that they've got leverage because they know people want to see it, but usually it's like, it's Netflix's now, and everyone gets paid their royalty percentage out of that fee, and that's it, they're done. And you know you won't ever see any more from that film again.
That's what I found it really interesting. The Christmas TV, well, in the UK, this year was the first year I noticed, you know, it used to be on Christmas Day the big new release film that hadn't been released yet, that everyone was really excited about, that was, you know, old Toy Story's going to be on for the first time. And this year, that has gone now. That is, and there seems to be a return to loads more old classics.
Yeah.
Well, Love Actually was on about 1,000 times.
Yeah, it's true.
Home Alone was on 100 times.
I think Frozen was on terrestrial TV for the first time.
Yes.
So people who don't have streaming services or haven't bought the DVD or don't have the Disney Channel or whatever,
every child has seen Frozen.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's quite strange how TV seems to me to be returning to more old classics.
Well, because they're so behind the curve, what's the point of trying to chase it anymore, I suppose?
Yeah.
You know? But I quite like seeing the old classics, just going, what's on? Oh, I watched quite a few films over Christmas, just because I was like, oh, I've not even thought about this in a while. Watched Muppet Treasure Island again.
Oh,
that
did
was
you?
On. Watched Muppet Christmas Carol.
I did. Did you watch 101 Dalmatians?
No, I didn't watch it. Well, the cartoon one.
Yes, of course. Why would you watch the other one?
Yeah.
I have to do a quick shout out to a film I did watch over Christmas, which was on.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really great. We talked before about films you can watch with your nan and granddad.
Yes.
The perfect one. Raymond Briggs' Ethelwyn Ernest, which is the story of his parents growing up from in the 1930s to the 1970s, which is just it just feels you're having a great slice of British history from a normal family's perspective. Sort of like Gogglebox, but in cartoon, but in real life.
Sure.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'll give that 8 marics as well. So if you haven't seen Ethelwyn Ernest, and you're looking for something to watch with your grandparents or an older audience, they would love that shit, mate.
All of my grandparents are dead, so I can watch anything I like with them.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's quite all right. You know, it's what happens to grandparents.
You can still...
And all of us.
You can still watch the film, though, even if you haven't got grandparents.
Well, that's true. It can. I think that's enough of letters. I'm just trying to think if I watched anything else over Christmas. Danielle Ward hadn't seen Captain America Winter Soldier, so we watched that. That holds up. It's a good film. And Iron Man 3. It's the two good ones, basically. We watched those. They still hold up. Good fun films. If you like The Nice Guys, you'll like Iron Man 3 because it's Shane Black. It's just the same stuff. It's fun. Now, you saw another film this week.
That was it, Sour Grapes. That's what I was going to talk about.
Oh, Sour Grapes was the one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That was it.
It's because it went so seamlessly from letters into another
film.
There
was no... didn't sound like an extra section, but
it didn't.
I would use the letters section to go into that film.
Well, I mean, I usually mock you for your segues. In that one, I didn't even notice it happened.
Maybe I've become perfect at doing segues.
It turns out 2017 is your year. I mean, your powers have amplified enormously.
Well, 2016 definitely wasn't.
Well, that turns out I thought we had a whole other section, and that's the end of the podcast.
Well, all good things must come to an end, and some average things as well.
Yeah, and this podcast.
Yes.
That's it for this week. If you'd like to write to us, then go to filmfandango.com and fill out the form there, and we'll read out your letter on the programme. Also, I need to say that we do all of this for free, so if you would like to donate towards our running costs, because going to the cinema in London is prohibitively expensive, then please go to filmfandango.com again and click the donate button, and everyone who has, thank you very much.
Do you know, talking about that, I normally go to the Picture House, and this nice man bought me a voucher, so I went to the Everyman for a matinee.
Yeah.
On a non sort of bank holiday day.
Yeah.
£14.
Yeah.
This is a matinee.
Yeah. It's unreal, isn't it?
It's a total piss take.
Yeah. No, I mean, it must be because... Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because I've read that cinema attendance is down, like way, way down. But they've also never made more money than they're making now. So they've found a level at which people who love to go to the cinema will keep going, even if they hike the prices up.
Well, all the chairs have got better.
That's true.
Chairs have improved.
Yeah.
But prices have...
Do you remember
tripled.
In the 80s? It was wooden benches. Do you remember that? It was wooden benches with broken glass cemented into it.
Really comfortable chairs, better than the chairs in your own home.
That's right. That's the advertising slogan of the Picture House.
But it will cost you 3 times as much.
Anyway,
it was supposed to be the end of the podcast.
It was. It's fine. I will be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.